I think they got the biggest hearts in the sport. They just their willingness to please and their desire to perform are second to none.
Lance Mackey does it again. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 16th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a reality check at an East Coast seafood show.
We're promoting wild fish, and I guess to see as much farmed seafood products here is kind of shocking.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Fostering safe, connected schools is a foundation for academic achievement through annual school climate surveys. Information at aasb.org. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Iditarod 2010 is one for the record books. Lance Mackey crossed the finish line in Nome at 2:59 this afternoon to seize victory in this year's race, creating a new Iditarod record. APRN Iditarod Trail reporter Ellen Lockyer has this update from Nome.
Lance Mackey did it again. He seized victory in this year's Iditarod to claim four championships in a row. Mackey drove his team up Front Street to ecstatic cheers. The 8-day, 23-hour, and 59-minute finish trashes earlier records held by Doug Swingley and by Mackey himself, but does not top Martin Boozer's 8-day, 22-hour finish in 2002, which still stands as the fastest Iditarod. Mackey gave credit to his outstanding team. Two-year-old stars, he said at the finish. They are all heart, he said.
Slow and steady. I don't go very fast, and I've said this before. Maybe once or twice the fastest team's won this race, but rarely does the fastest team ever win a race. But I do believe the best team always wins. So I don't base my training and my breeding program around speed. But I think for the most part, that, you know, I think they got the biggest hearts in the sport. They just their willingness to please and their desire to perform are second to none. They go above and beyond, and they have never ever disappointed me or let me down.
Second place finisher Hans Gott trailed Mackey by about 10 miles out of safety. Gott made it into Nome shortly after 4 p.m. Jeff King, a four-time Iditarod winner, is expected to place third in the race. This year's race to Nome put new emphasis on dog team endurance, with long runs and short rests pushing top drivers almost a day ahead of the rest of the pack. In Nome, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
At last check, GPS showed Jeff King less than 5 miles from Nome. King led for much of the race and praised his team, but said they needed more rest than Mackey's in the final push to the finish. Ken Anderson is expected into Nome after King. John Baker, Hugh Neff, Ramey Smith, Sebastian Schnula, Dallas Seavey, and Mitch Seavey round out the top 10 in the standings. So far, 14 mushers have scratched, and 54 are still on the trail. Rookie Hank DeBruin currently holds the Red Lantern. He is resting at the Nulato checkpoint, almost 350 miles from Nome. An Anchorage Superior Court judge today said an initiative requiring parental notification before young women can get abortions can remain on this year's ballot, but he ordered the lieutenant governor to rewrite some of the descriptive information that people will see before they vote. Judge Frank Feifner determined that aspects of the ballot information, as well as the petition signed by the public, were misleading and in some instances unconstitutional. However, he ruled that sponsors will not have to gather new signatures to qualify the initiative for this year's general election in November. The court ruled that specifically, the ballot description did not notify voters that the initiative could lead to criminal proceedings against doctors, or that under current laws, underage women have a right to abortions without parental notification. Patrick Gamble, the chief executive of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, has been chosen to serve as the University of Alaska System's next president. The Board of Regents released its decision Tuesday following interviews with the prospective candidates and campus tours. Gamble will replace Mark Hamilton, who last year announced plans to retire. The annual salary for the position is $295,000. The board, in a statement, said it expected a transition between the two in June. Alaska is among 16 states receiving federal dollars to assist in developing better methods for doctors and hospitals to share electronic health records. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius announced the award yesterday. $162 million will be spread between the states, with Alaska's share totaling just under $5 million. Sebelius says the idea is to allow health information to be securely exchanged.
They help to unleash the power of health information technology to cut costs, eliminate paperwork, and best of all, help doctors deliver higher quality coordinated care.
Sebelius says when electronic health records are developed and used correctly, they have huge benefits for cost savings and efficiencies in delivering care for patients and doctors.
We also know that despite these benefits, we're in a situation where only about 20% of the doctors and only 10% of hospitals today even have basic electronic health records. That's because even though many doctors around the country can see the potential benefits, there are also still lots of obstacles.
Sebelius says one of the problems is that health record systems are not always compatible, and these funds will help standardize electronic records programs. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an in-depth profile of the city of Anchorage.
This data is fascinating, but its power is in how it can drive action.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Residents of Salcha, a community of about 1,000 people, 33 miles southeast of Fairbanks, are trying to keep open a public water source. The community has no public water distribution or treatment system, leaving residents to fend for themselves to get water, usually from private wells or by hauling it from Fairbanks. Only one local source has been available, a tap from a well at the fairgrounds there, originally drilled in 2002. But a story in the News Miner about a year ago got the attention of the State Department of Environmental Conservation. The problem arose over the number of people who used the well. It serves more than 25 people, and that brings it under control of federal regulations that require more testing and assurances that the people there want. A bill by former Speaker Republican John Harris of Valdez would allow people to keep using the water by hanging a sign that tells users the well is unregulated, the water may not meet minimum safety standards, and people should use it at their own risk. Harris told the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee that meeting the federal requirements is too cumbersome.
You have a regulated water supply that's used by a few folks, and the cost to supply that water in the form of money and in the effort made by either the department and or anybody else involved seems to be either onerous or not in a regular form or whatever.
Christian Ryan, the Director of Environmental Health at DEC, says 295 water systems in Alaska are smaller than Salcha, and they meet federal standards. And unless Salcha takes the minimum steps, use of the well will remain limited to 25 people.
We really have our hands tied, unfortunately, in bending the rules. If they're already a federal rule, and we enforce no rules beyond what EPA requires. The state has no additional requirements for these federal systems beyond what EPA is already mandating. So I don't really have much ground to maneuver.
Ryan says the federal government requires the system to show there is no volatile compounds in the water, such as spilled fuel. They must also show the absence of coliforms that cause severe illness, lead, copper, nitrates, radon, and arsenic. And there's no way the state can help the community take or avoid the first step.
They need to go to a laboratory and have their water tested for all of those things, which would be several hundred dollars. They would have had the results back in approximately a month. So that was the communication we have with Salsha. Well, our goal would be for them to do those items, and then we would know their water's safe and they could serve the entire community.
The bill will be heard again in the committee. It is not now scheduled. Four Southeast Alaska communities are working toward a regional solution to their garbage problems. They say they're considering a variety of options, but first they need more members. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Many Southeast towns ship their garbage south to huge landfills in the Pacific Northwest. Others pile it in nearly full dumps, which means new landfills need to be built. Both are expensive practices that some would like to end. Community leaders have talked for years about setting up a regional landfill, which could include an incinerator, recycling system, and waste-to-energy plant. Last fall, voters in four communities passed ordinances allowing them to join together and form a regional solid waste authority. The goal is to find better ways to deal with their garbage. But the towns, Petersburg, Wrangell, Thorne Bay, and Craig, may not be enough to make a significant change.
I think our primary goal is to really try to broaden our membership right now as an authority.
That's authority member Justin Sorensen, city administrator in Thorne Bay on eastern Prince of Wales Island. He told those attending a recent authority meeting in Juneau that he wants more cities to join. But in the meantime, there are a few things the group can do.
Municipal solid waste is a volume equation. The more municipal waste you can have in, the cheaper the cost to dispose of that, whether that's on a local level, a regional level, or even on a transshipment level. I don't think there's too many local landfills left in Southeast Alaska. Majority of the garbage is getting transshipped down south. So that might be an opportunity in the future to try to consolidate the transshipment costs to try to cheapen that cost of service for all of us.
Authority members and a paid consultant plan to approach other Southeast towns about asking voters permission to join the group. The authority is particularly interested in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka, the region's three largest garbage producers. But immediate interest may come closer to current members' hometowns. Klawock is a likely candidate since it's next to Craig, where John Bowling is city administrator.
Craig and Klawock are very closely tied together in how we handle our solid waste. The city of Klawock actually manages the local transfer station landfill. It's actually in the city limits of Craig on property that was once owned by a local Native corporation, so it's kind of a confusing mix of authorities and ownerships, but the short of it is we do all of our solid waste issues together, and so I'm hoping to get that clock will climb on board with the authority here this year.
Heidelberg, south of Craig, is also interested. Official Adrian LaCornu says the town is in a tight situation with its garbage.
We're anxious to close an existing unpermitted dump. And the option that we have identified now is not much better. And so I think the community would be anxious to see what options this organization would come up with. And I'm sure we could convince the electorate to vote for it.
Several Southeast towns have considered setting up their own regional garbage facilities. Cake considered a high-tech plasma burner, but did not move forward. Thorne Bay studied land that could become a regional landfill, but so far has taken no action. And Wrangell recently looked at setting up a new disposal unit. Thorne Bay's Sorensen says any community could start its own regional landfill or incinerator and hope for the best. But working together through the authority makes more options feasible.
What are some of the opportunities that are going to present themselves? What are some of the options, some of the long-term goals as far as a larger regional facility that might be able to utilize waste to energy, recovery, composting, things that you can do on more of an industrial level that each community alone can't find a cost-effective way to do.
Southeast Town's next chance to join will be during the fall municipal elections. Authority membership requires local voters to approve an authorizing ordinance. In Petersburg, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
For the first time ever, the community of Togiak has a presence at the Boston Seafood Show, which wraps up today. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The International Boston Seafood Show is among the largest seafood shows on earth, and it features seafood products from hundreds of different fisheries, including the salmon fisheries in Bristol Bay. Something new at this year's show is a booth set up by Togiak Seafoods, which is staffed by three Togiak residents. Togiak Seafoods is a 50-50 partnership between the Traditional Council of Togiak and Copper River Seafoods, which also has a booth at this year's Boston Seafood Show. One of the Togiak residents attending the show is Jonathan Forsling, who represents the Traditional Council of Togiak on the management team for Togiak Seafoods. This is his first trip to Boston for the seafood show, and he was surprised by the amount of farmed fish on display.
I guess, you know, a lot of booths with carrying farmed fish is kind of unique. I didn't hope to see that much farmed fish, you know, because we're promoting wild fish, and I guess to see as much farmed seafood products here is kind of shocking a little bit.
The International Boston Seafood Show and Seafood Processing America features around 16,000 buyers and sellers from more than 90 countries. In total, there are around 800 exhibitors at this year's show. Another of the representatives from Togiak is commercial fisherwoman Martha Fox, who's a traditional Yupik speaker.
This is the biggest shows I went to, and I realized that it is for fishermen that live in my area. It's important to keep the quality of fish high if we want better fish and more markets.
The International Boston Seafood Show is a place where seafood companies from across the globe show off their newest products. For instance, Ocean Beauty Seafoods is showing off their Sea Choice Steamer entrees, including Mandarin Orange Salmon, which can be cooked in the microwave in just 9 minutes. Another new product on display is Trident Seafoods' Trident Naturals Caribbean-style cod fillet, which is a pre-sauced, vacuum-packed, skinless, boneless 6-ounce fillet of wild Pacific cod. According to Trident Seafoods, the new natural steam self-venting film allows consumers to microwave individual portions right in their own packets. Carolyn Carlos is a commercial fisherwoman from Togiak who's been checking out the seafood products over the last few days. Carlos says the show has stressed to her the importance of marketing quality products.
When I first, you know, signed on with Togiak Seafood, it was really overwhelming for me because that I had never bled and iced my fish. And I honestly thought that it was just overwhelming. But once we started it, it wasn't like I pictured it out to be. It was actually, you know, as a fisher woman, I wanted, you know, to get paid, and Togiak Seafood the opportunity to pay a good price for our fish.
The International Boston Seafood Show runs through Tuesday, and other exhibitors at the show include the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, ASME, Icicle Seafoods, Norquest Seafoods, and Ocean Beauty Seafoods. You can get more information on the show online at bostonseafood.com. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years.
Percent of Anchorage residents think the city is a good place to live. At the same time, slightly over 30% of the population went without a basic need sometime during 2009. Those are just two results from a recently released in-depth community profile. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The new 2009 Anchorage Community Assessment contains 231 quality of life indicators. The indicators are clustered within five main categories: economic, education, health, natural environment, public safety, and social environment. The data compiled comes from three sources. There are the expected secondary ones, such as federal, state, and local, police, school district, and food bank records. But there's also 400 random telephone and 1,400 face-to-face surveys. Michelle Brown, president of United Way Anchorage, says it's the individual surveys of city residents that often put the secondary data into perspective.
It really gives you a sense of what's important to them to change, to make sure that their lives are productive and therefore the whole community is productive. How do people truly experience life on a daily basis, not just what's a number out there that's abstract and intellectually interesting?
It appears 90% of us believe we have opportunities to work in the Anchorage area. That's high, but down 3% from 2006. Over 90% of us think the city's natural environment and recreational opportunities contribute to our physical and mental well-being. Over half of us spend more than 30% of our take-home pay on housing, the level the federal government says threatens financial stability. That's up 8% from 2008. 25% of us are not saving for the future. 52% think racism is a problem in Anchorage. Secondary or primary, the findings are fascinating. But Brown says that's not enough.
The whole intent when we started this in 2006 and committed to routine updates was to mobilize action. This data is fascinating, but its power is in how it can drive action.
The Municipality of Anchorage, the Rasmussen Foundation, Providence Health and Human Services Alaska, and United Way sponsored the assessment. Their motivation was pragmatic. Brown says a good example of how Anchorage uses the profile involves high school graduation. In 2006, the year of the first community assessment, the school district had a graduation rate of 64%.
When we look through the rest of the indicators of why are we losing so many of our youngsters, it became pretty clear we were losing them to substance use, because the data was pretty high of how many kids were using substances, and we were losing them to crime, gangs, and we were losing them to interpersonal violence, very, very high levels of violence in their interpersonal relationship among teens.
Brown says armed with the data, various sectors of the community concerned with teenagers began to coordinate their efforts as part of a new group, Anchorage United for Youth.
We have a whole series of strategies, and everybody's working together, blending their efforts, and most importantly, reporting their outcomes. How is each child doing? And then how does that roll up across the community? And in the 3 years we've been doing that, graduation rate has gone up 7%. Juvenile substance use has gone down about 5%, and juvenile arrest has also gone down about 5%.
Such results seem to back up the statement flowing across the cover of the Anchorage Community Assessment 2009 Comprehensive Report. Quote, together we are improving the place we call home. The 2009 Community Assessment, along with the two earlier reports, is available at the United Way of Anchorage website under Community Projects in the News and Information section. This is Len Anderson.
The state's top small schools drama debate and forensics student says a tie was a great way to go out. Sitka High School senior Barrett Wilbur was the top scorer at this year's state DDF tournament in Anchorage earlier this month. Her 15-member team shared the overall title with perennial DDF powerhouse Whitestone in their first ever head-to-head matchup in the small schools division. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Wilbur medaled in three events. She took first place in expository speaking, first place along with teammates Jake Turner and Hannah Hamburg in Reader's Theater, and fourth place in debate. Wilbur says she knew she was doing well at the state meet, but not this well.
DDF isn't like a lot of like sports. You know, when you're in a track race and you cross the finish line, you know that you won. But in DDF, you don't figure out any of your results about how you're doing until the competition is over.
Wilbur has been competing in the DDF program all 4 years of high school. Her coach, Randy Huey, says this depth of experience made Wilbur tough to beat.
She won events, scored tons of points in debate, in speaking, forensics, and in drama, which is how she got to be the top scorer. She did all of those major categories of events.
Wilbur's 7-minute expository speech was on photography. The piece was based on one of her college entrance essays. Her reader's theater piece was called Boise, Idaho, which she and Turner and Hamburg had been working on all year. The event is one of the most challenging in DDF because the actors engage only the audience as they read. They don't physically look at or interact with their fellow performers. Wilbur says that Boise, Idaho evolved slowly into a state contender.
It's just this ridiculous scene in which two very boring people are sitting in a cafe and suddenly a very strange person next to them starts narrating their lives. And so they start to play along and the whole thing just gets crazy. And so I guess to improve it over the season, we worked a lot on character development and making our characters stronger and funnier. So that, I think, is really what helped us go from the level of competition we saw at regional tournaments to really succeed at state.
Whitestone has dominated small schools DDF in the state since it began its program about 15 years ago. Sitka recently has been the team to beat among large schools, and the two had never met since Sitka had dropped into 3A. Wilbur says that when the tournament organizers, after two solid days of competition, announced a tie, the place erupted.
We were sitting right in front of Whitestone in the auditorium, and we pretty much all went nuts. I mean, we always knew that Whitestone is the best small team, and we've never had to compete against them until this year. And so to end my DDF career with a first-place tie with Whitestone was just amazing.
Sitka senior Barrett Wilbur won a $1,000 scholarship for her top finish at the state drama debate and forensics tournament. She plans to attend Swarthmore College. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Nome, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Mike Mason in Dillingham, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, unlocking Alaska's resource potential. ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.